What is up, everybody? Welcome to Wayward Artists in a Wayward World. I'm Sid, and joining me today is the editor-in-chief slash founder of Uppercut Critic. Did I say that right? I should have asked you beforehand.
Oh, Uppercut Crit, whatever. It's all good.
Nice. Ty Galez Rowe. How are you doing, Ty?
Hi, I'm good. How are you, Sid?
I'm doing really great. This is our first time ever talking to each other besides on Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm very excited to talk to you because we've had Luis Adamia on the show for season one, and he's independent games journalist. He kind of does his own thing. He's really cool. But you, Ty, I really love you because, like, you have very strong opinions about video games online.
I do.
Yeah, they're very strong. And sometimes I find myself, like, disagreeing with you, but also it allows me to, like, reflect and be like, all right, so what exactly am I, like, not to, like, agreeing here? I feel like you're sometimes, like, the voice of reason compared to, like, the echo chamber of video games where everyone's just like, oh, yeah, The Last of Us Part II is an amazing game, which, you know, granted, I think it was a pretty good game, but, like...
There are interesting parts of it, is what I'll say.
That's for sure. Ty, for the uninitiated, tell me who you are, what you do, and how do we know each other?
Yeah, so... Excuse me. So we know each other from Twitter, specifically from, I think we were both at one point, like, kind of funny people to a degree.
I think so. Yeah.
I don't really feel like I like interact with that community much anymore. But I do still do video game shit. So there's that. But yeah, I run Uppercut, which is like an indie gaming, mostly crit, but we also do like silly listicles and stuff, site. And then I'm also, as of the end of last year, a full-time freelance games journalist. So I do news over at GameSpot, and, you know, I sell my words for money around the web.
Nice. And how does that feel just doing freelance full time as someone who wants to do freelance in theater specifically? Like, what's the process of you just being like, oh yeah, I'm just going to dedicate my whole life to writing video games now?
Well, I mean, it's mostly just, I just have gotten extremely like lucky. Cause you know, like my living situation is such that I don't pay exorbitant amounts of money for rent. Like I live with my parents, which super, super helps in that case. Like I do still pay for a lot of shit, but it's not nearly as much as if I was trying to like rent an apartment on my own in Denver. And then like to, you know, I have my GameSpot gig, which is very steady. And I have a lot of like really good friends who, you know, send me like links for jobs and stuff like that. So I just, you know, am fortunate, I guess, in a lot of ways that I've been able to take this thing that I like and, you know, make an actual go of it.
Yeah. It's very important to have like those connections, like those friends that will uplift you. You know, I'm very grateful that a lot of people on this show have like uplifted me in a lot of ways by one, coming on the show, but two, also a lot of people in my circle are from theater. And so back in the old days when we used to do theater,
before, being in person was a thing.
When it was, like, I would just hit people up and be like, hey, I got this crazy idea for a show. Let's do it in a bar. And we did. We did a show in a bar called Reflection.
Nice.
It was written by my friend and we all got paid equally. You know, like it was a fun time. So yeah, having those connections and having that stability is very important. What made you want to write for video games?
Well, I was like interested in writing anyway. I went to college for English, and was doing an internship my junior year at a local like queer magazine. So I was already kind of interested in like writing and the term journalist is like very fraught in our space, but like I liked the idea of like interviews and features and that kind of stuff. And I was like, you know, that I was enjoying doing that anyway. And then at the same time, I had some friends who were like, you should really try listening to podcasts. And I was like, all right, fine, I'll try listening to podcasts. So then I was just like kind of searching Apple Podcasts for like things that I liked, and I was like, well, I like video games. So then I found, you know, like the IGN gaming podcast and like Kind of Funny and all that stuff, and I was like, oh, this is like people like get paid for this. People like this is like a job for people. And I heard, you know, a couple different people saying like, hey, you need to like actually be doing it if you want to do it, so you have something to show off. And I was like, all right. So I started like my little blog that then eventually became Uppercut. And I was just like, oh, like, yeah, and then two, encountering people like Dialcina and Austin Walker and like, you know, the critics who came up before I did, I was like, oh, these people are really rad. I would like to do that too. And so then I tried to, and here we are.
Yeah. And how's it going so far? I see you guys post a lot. I follow the Twitter, and you guys seem like you had a pretty good, like, you know, despite the circumstances last year, like it seemed like, yeah, you guys had a pretty good year.
We did, really. I mean, we got a pretty huge boost from us doing our drive to save the EGM features that got dropped. Which I guess I don't know how in tune with the video game media news everybody is, but basically EGM was an outlet, and they had been doing a program where they were like running, I think it was like 5 features a week or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, and so they had like all of these freelancers commissioned, and then their powers that be just like swept in and said, like, you don't have a budget to do this anymore, and they had to just like completely drop everything. Wow. So all of those people, like, and a ton of them had already, you know, like done the work, were like not going to get paid. So we were just like, hey, like, let's try to raise a little bit of money, and we'll try to save like 4 of these. And then instead, a dumbass who shall not be named subtweeted us and popped off a whole thing, and we ended up raising like $12,000.
Damn.
And we ended up rescuing 42 pieces.
Wow. What is that like? Did you say $14,000?
A little over $12,000.
Like, What goes through your mind when you think like, oh wow, someone gave us like $12,000 to do something?
It was bananas, because we originally only asked for 400 because we were gonna save 4 pieces at $100 each. And then, yeah, that person like subtweeted us, and it just like set off a whole thing in response, and all these people donated it, and it was just really wild. And it was, the wildest part was like, I literally just like woke up that day and found out what was happening, and I like talked to some freelance friends, and then I texted the Uppercut group chat, and I was like, hey, like, can we do this? And they were like, yeah, like, that seems like a cool idea. And then by like noon that day, it was just like going bananas.
Yeah.
And like, we were just like watching that pretty pal pool go up, like, what is happening?
I bet, man, that's so cool. Like, that is really, really dope.
It was really rad, but it's a lot of like responsibility on the back end, I guess.
Oh yeah, like, I don't think I'll ever see like $12,000 in my lifetime.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of money all at once, and like, yeah, it was a whole thing to make sure that we were like, you know, keeping track of everything and like doing everything that we said we were gonna do, and being really transparent about everything. And it was just like, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, I got a grant for a project that I was supposed to do last year. It was about $3,500, and even that was just like, wow, that is a lot of money. I mean, like, granted, I'm very grateful in my job. Like, I think, like, if I save enough, like, in a couple of weeks, I could make that much money. But still, like, you know, it was still a lot of money, a lot of responsibility, a lot of, oh wow, these guys are going to be watching me right now, and I have to do everything I told them that I was going to do. And unfortunately, because of the pandemic, I couldn't. So I had to return all the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a whole thing. And then too, it was like figuring out like, oh shit, like, we didn't think about the fact that like we have to deal with like exchange rate fees and shit. Mm-hmm. So like, we have to figure out the extra math there. And like, it was a whole thing, but it was cool. And we got it done, and we saved all those pieces, and those people got paid. Yeah. So That's the best part. It was a net good. Yeah.
That's the best part when you pay people. Like,
yeah.
Even when we didn't use the grant to the full potential, I still paid our playwrights, which were children, and mm-hmm. me and some of the other crew got paid too, because initially we thought, oh, we were going to do this playwright form thing. And writing those checks, man, I felt like a fraud. I was like, who am I? Like, big money bags over here.
I know. That's me every time. Every time people are like, oh, hey, is it time for us to get our Patreon money? I'm like, oh man. Okay. Time to be the grown up.
Yeah.
Cool.
Exactly.
But yeah, you gotta get used to it. Cause I mean, everybody who works with Uppercut for the most part, unless they request otherwise, gets paid.
Nice. So. That's like the best part. That's like, I truly admire that. And that's kind of my mission for my theater troupe that's kind of now defunct because of the pandemic. Yeah. Like, my job, like, my dedication was like, we're going to get paid something. When we did our first show, I told everyone, we're going to get paid in tips. And my goal is to, like, make sure everyone gets a cup of coffee. And then with the success of Reflection, we were able to pay them 2 cups of coffee.
Yeah.
So that was like,
yeah, that's basically what we do. Like, we don't make, like, a lot of money, but like all of the people who work at Uppercut, we all make the same amount. Mm-hmm. I don't make any more than they do. And we all take like 15% of our total Patreon money for the month, and then the rest goes into, you know, paying our columnists and our like sub editors and stuff.
Yeah. Fun adult stuff. But
yeah,
at the end of the day, it's kind of cool to say that, hey, I got a company.
Yeah. Well, and at least it's like, it gives me like sick pride to be like, I am a better boss and human than like most like fucking CEOs.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's totally, there's that too. Like, I kind of felt that way as well, because where I'm from, Spokane, you know, I love my theater community here, but not a lot of paying opportunities. And so the fact that I was just like kind of going off the grid, that's why we're called Wayward Artists.
Yeah.
Like, we're going off like the path, you know, like we're lost. I don't know where it's, I make it sound more mysterious than I guess a right to be or whatever, but like it was so cool being like, yeah, not only we're doing what the big guys are doing here, but also we're getting paid.
Yeah
going back on like how we met, I don't know how we met actually. I think like,
I don't really either. I remember that we used to DM sometimes about like,
yeah,
gay shit, but like, yeah, I don't really remember how it started.
I feel like it was for sure kind of funny. And I think it was because like, you're a fellow gay and I was a fellow gay. And I was like, mm-hmm. you know what? They're not a lot of that. And kind of funny, you know, I engage with the kind of funny community. I enjoyed it. We had a few of their guests beyond this show too. Megaran and Mike Drucker were on the show. Mm-hmm. And so I engaged with that community. But I think like initially that's how we met. And we were going to meet at the kind of funny prom thing that they were doing. Mm-hmm. But due to personal drama that had nothing to do with kind of funny, just with a friend that I was supposed to meet there, I was just like, man, I don't really want to go to San Francisco right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought you didn't go, right?
Yeah, it was bullshit. Like, in retrospect, since that was so long ago, I shouldn't have done that. I'll give you, like, more deets about that, because it's, they probably will listen to the show, so I don't
know. You know, you didn't miss a lot. That like, that whole thing, there was a lot going on. And also, I was a disaster human that weekend.
In what ways? Like,
well, okay, so here's the fun fact. So I live in Colorado, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fun thing about drinking alcohol at altitude is that if you then go lower places, you can drink a lot more mm-hmm. and not realize it.
Interesting.
Until you're like, you know, a super blackout in a barcade, you know, falling downstairs and shit. Like,
That sounds messy. That sounds like this one party I had in my house, and all my friends had to like literally pick me up. And then Art, my dear friend, you know, initially he thought about like just leaving me outside, like as the good friend that he is. But I just told him, I was like, man, dude, I gotta like pee. And so like he like literally him and another guy picked me up, and I just like whipped it out and. Right there. It was a hard time, but it gave me It taught me a lesson about my alcohol tolerance.
Yeah, I was a very messy bitch for a long time with booze, and I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, there that was a whole thing. There was a whole time.
Yeah, I'm not that way anymore, mostly because the pandemic has forced me not to. Like it was pretty wild in 19, let's just say. Which I talk fondly about it as if it was like 20 years ago, which honestly it feels like it.
It kind of was, yeah.
Yeah. Guys, gals, and non-binary pals, this is Wayward Artists in a Wayward World. Each and every Sunday, I talk with a wayward artist and we talk about a person they're thankful for. It's based on Jared Petty's podcast, Pockets Full of Soup, which Jessica Howard was on.
Yes, I was wondering if that's what it was based on.
Yeah, you got it.
I
You win
was
the
like, this
prize.
seems like a similar idea.
Yeah, I essentially stole it because he wasn't doing it anymore. So I was like, oh, this is, I really love that concept. I loved that show. And I really
Yeah.
wanted to connect with like friends and other artists and just talk, you know, just seeing how they're doing and bring some positivity, you know? And that show did it for me too. I mean, Jared's a pretty cool guy.
Yeah, I liked that show when it was around.
And Jessica Howard, who's one of who works with you guys. Who talked?
Yes.
Did you listen to that episode, by the way, of like 100 best video games?
Oh, yes. I did listen to her.
Yeah, she gassed you up. She gassed you up.
I know. She's such a sweetheart. I love her. She's like my biggest fan.
Yeah, she's. I think she said that too.
Yeah, we both stand very hard for each other.
Yeah. Well, her episode was really good too.
Yeah, she's so good on like anything like that, podcasting, like anything that like requires, being like sociable and, charming. She's very, very good
Yeah.
in all of that kind of stuff.
Well, don't like put yourself down. You're doing a good
Oh no,
job
I'm
so
not
far.
saying that I'm not. I'm just saying she's very good at it.
Oh, okay, that's fair. There we go. So Ty, I'm gonna ask you the question I ask each and everyone on the show. Tell me about someone you're thankful for.
Well, I guess kind of going off of like the talking about our like writing and stuff like that, I think that the person I want to talk about is, I mentioned her earlier in the podcast, but my friend Dialesina.
Oh.
She is a writer and a very prominent critic. She did a lot of work for Waypoint and Paste. She also is doing more like Let's Play stuff over on YouTube. And she just like, I think was one of the biggest factors in like me figuring out who I wanted to be as like a writer and as a critic and just like as a person in this space in a lot of ways. And I just learned a whole lot from her.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Dia, although I haven't seen any of her work. I see her kind of floating around the space. Tell me, like, in what ways has she like influenced you? Like, kind of go back there. Like, who were you before you met Dia?
I mean, I was, God, I think when I started in this space, it was 2017. So I was like, I don't know, 20-ish, 21, somewhere in there. Maybe 22, I don't know. And I like, I just got out of college and stuff, but I was so fresh in this space. And then, you're walking around, you're seeing the IGNs, you're seeing the GameSpots, and everything's like, not bad, but kind of samey. And then I don't even remember how I found it, but I found this essay that she wrote on her Medium about Dragon Age Origins, which is like one of my favorite games ever. And she was just talking about like all of the shit in it that's kind of fucked up. And just really taking it to task. But I remember just being really impressed and inspired by the fact that she was like ripping this game I loved to shit. And like I was so happy and just like enjoying it and like thinking about it so much. And that I was able to like see all her points and like recognize them and be like, yes, I can reconcile that with the things that I still love about this game. And it was like the first time I saw really like what games criticism like could be. And I wanted to do that. I wanted to be like her. Also, her writing is just incredible. She's my favorite writer. I just like the amount of skill she has as a writer is just bananas. And so yeah, I wanted to be like her. So that, yeah.
Yeah, I think like that's so cool because I think that's all what a lot of the video game space is like missing in order for it to be like art. You know, like you think about art and like what makes video games art. It's like, is it the scenery and or the like the acting and such? And I'm like, you know, I think like those are all important elements, but I would wager also like the way in which we critique art as being like a huge factor of video games or the validity of video games being art. When I look at a play or a theater show, I'm just like, you know, I criticize it, good and bad. I can reconcile with all those parts of it, and I've seen so many plays. And just because I like maybe despise something that was going on in a show, like I can also reconcile with that, like of all the positivity. Like maybe I can be like, oh, the costumes look good, or the costumes fit the aesthetic, or you know, maybe so and so actor didn't work here, but like these actors are all great. And I think video games have the trouble right now, at least what I see is that it's either this game is really, really good, or this game is really, really bad. And like, there's no in between where we can be like, oh, yeah, this was good, but also this was bad, and stuff like that. Or, you know, when someone has like strong opinions about like top video games, like that isn't like that huge echo chamber where, you know, for example, what game? I don't want to say The Last of Us. I feel like The Last of Us is like that's such a hard game to critique.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with that one.
Yeah, but like I think that's so cool that like a lot of people can be like, hey, this isn't necessarily like the 10 out of 10 that a lot of people are saying. But also I feel like a lot of criticism towards that game is like some of it was kind of like homophobic in a lot of ways and transphobic to some extent too with that one character. I follow like Ian, their account's really good, but anyway, I think what I'm trying to get at is like video games criticism is very I kind of like I know how you felt like with the big it feels like a big echo chamber, and I see someone like you critiquing out there and being like, you know, qu making me question my own thoughts too.
Well, and that's what she did for me, and I don't know, I loved it. The second I finished reading that essay, I would like just wanted to read everything she had written. I just loved it, and I loved everything that she did. And then we actually became friends, and that was weird, and I was like, oh, this like person who I've admired for a couple of years now is like someone who considers me to be like a friend and like worth talking to.
How did that happen?
I don't know. It literally, I remember she started following my blog and then she started following me, and I don't know. It just kind of like happened.
Sparks flew, fireworks shot
I
up.
it wasn't even like that much. It just kind of felt like, I don't know, like I just like woke up one day and we were like friends.
Well, that's dope. That's so cool and stuff that happens like that, especially when with people that you admire. Like a good playwright that I love, that was one of the first people. I actually directed a scene from their show, Yusuf El-Gundy. He's a Middle Eastern playwright. And I really admire his work. Like I'll gas up and anything that Yusuf writes. Like he is really good stuff. Like what's really great about like not to go off a tangent about Yusuf, but like what I really love about his work is because he's from the Middle East, he doesn't necessarily make the Middle Eastern character like the hero of the story. Like he's just like, yeah, maybe what's going on with this Middle Eastern character, like there's probably like some problematic shit going on, but he's not really the hero in this either. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Like you're treating like Middle Eastern characters like human beings. That's
Yeah,
great.
like people.
Yeah. And so one day, you know, like I reached out to him and I was like, hey, I love your work. I found his Facebook, which I thought like, oh man, this is kind of, am I going to be really weird about like just messaging him on, because like I didn't find a business email or anything, but I messaged him on Facebook and all of a sudden, yeah, we became good friends, and I got to see the world premiere of one of his shows in Seattle, which was like kind of cool. I flew myself all the way to Seattle to see a show for free, which, buying a plane ticket to Seattle is not that expensive, but it's really cool, like, to see like the people that we admire, like in our industries, become our friends. And it's also weird.
It's super weird, especially because I think like you do kind of have to like, it's not necessarily the don't meet your heroes thing, but it is the idea of like those people are also people. So like they're probably at some point going to disappoint you. They're probably going to do something you don't understand or you don't agree with. They're gonna have like a bad day where they're a dick to you or someone else, but like they're people too. And like, as much as you like love and admire whatever them, like they you gotta if you're gonna actually like have a relationship in that way, you do have to realize like kind of let that shit go.
Exactly. I see that with like my professors, who like my old professors, I guess. I graduated 2 years ago. But like there's a lot of things that I didn't agree with a lot of my teachers. But like at the end of the day, I kind of figured out that there are human beings too who screw up, which is that's why I like reading. I have a lot of like theory books in theater, like for directing specifically. And one person I always mention on the show, Anne Bogart, she always talks about her failures and stuff like that. And she teaches at Columbia University. And it's so cool seeing this person that I admire so much also just talking about like all the same stuff that like all the same struggles, all the same like issues that she was facing in the theater. Like kind of reflect back on me. And I actually got to email her about it too, which is like, oh wow, this person that I put on a pedestal, we're kind of on the same level now. Like that's so weird to think.
Yeah, it's wild, but it's good to just realize that people are people.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to do more and more. Like celebrity worship, I don't really do that anymore. Like, and worship in the sense where I'm like, oh, like I was just like super into a lot of celebrities. And then you hear all this stuff, quote unquote cancel culture or whatever, but like that's not true at all. But like problematic stuff that they did, which they should be
Yeah,
called
I
out
mean, there's a
for.
difference between like saying someone is doing harmful shit and not wanting them to continue that versus like just being like, they did a bad tweet.
Exactly. And so like when you see that kind of stuff, it also puts into perspective like, yeah, they're human beings too. And like most human beings, there are awful people out there. They're not like these gods.
And I mean, that's the thing too, right? Is like, there have been times where like, I've disagreed with Dia, or I've gotten mad about something she said or something, but like she's not an abuser, right? Like I'm not gonna like go to bat for her in that sense. Like if anything were to ever come out, it would be like a no-go. But there's a difference between that and like her having a video game take I don't like. You know what I mean? And
Oh
like just
no.
being like, she's not me. She's a different person. And so she can, just 'cause I think of her as a role model or whatever, like that's not her
Oh
responsibility.
yeah, absolutely. I'm always afraid of that. Like I'm like as a an artist, like influencing other people and like doing like, but we saw you do it, Sid. Like this is what you do, and just being like, ugh, that's I'm glad that you are influenced by me in a positive way, but like I also it's like a power thing, and I just like it makes me so uncomfortable that I have
No,
just
it
like the
gets scary, but it's like one of those things where like once it's there, it's kind of like the toothpaste situation where like you can't put it back. Which is why stuff like the ninja thing is so frustrating because it's like just because you don't want something to be your job, like when you have millions of people who pay attention to you, a lot of things become your job.
Yeah. But Ninja's like a Twitch streamer. Like they're all just awful. Like at least like for the most part anyway, like the ones I hear about, I feel like I'm sure there's like good Twitch streamers. I mean,
No, there are plenty of good ones, but it's just like
yeah.
people want a cape for a twinky little straight man, like way too much, considering that he doesn't fucking do anything, and also he's a millionaire.
Yeah, it's I'm not saying white privilege, but it's that's probably the case.
Yeah, it's being a cishet white dude.
Yeah. By the way, my mom's like hammering things, so that if we pick up hammering noises, it's Saturday and she's hammering.
That, you know what, I get it. I get it.
Tell me more about Dia though. Like, does she still influence your like, does she still give like critiques of like some of the writings that you do like nowadays?
She's helped me with edits on my stuff in the past. She hasn't recently. She's kind of been taking a more low-key role in life just in general because she has had some pretty big health stuff come up. But she's helped me with my writing a lot. She's helped Jess too. She's taught us a lot, I think, just in general. I mean, just from like watching her and then also having her, you know, like read through notes, especially on stuff that like I know that she knows about and I don't want to be like a stupid white person about. Like when I reviewed Greedfall, I was like, ooh, this is not a good premise. Let me talk about this. And then I was like, hey, Gia, like I know because you talk about imperialism and colonialism and stuff, like, will you check out this review? And she did. And you know, like we talked about the parts where I could like hit harder and stuff like that. And she's done that for me with a few things before. And she's a really good editor too. But yeah, that's kind of slowed down this year because she's had some health problems.
Yeah.
But
Is she okay? Like, and not to get too personal into,
yeah,
but
I mean she's like okay-ish. She's you know home and plugging along.
Yeah, I think that's at least anyway, when you said at home and plugging along, like that's kind of how I've been feeling. Like, I was talking with one of my theater friends, and I guess she wrote like a sad post, like a like what was it? Not depression. Oh God, I wish I can like show it on Instagram. It was something about like it was very depressive-y, depression-y. Oh no, she wrote that she hated her job, and I was like, do you hate your job, or do you hate the fact that all your coping mechanisms that you would have before the pandemic are basically extinct, and you have to wake up every single day, go to work, go back home and stare at the ceiling? Is what I wrote, and she was like, yes. Because that's essentially how, I love my job, but it's definitely one, and I've expressed that this with my boss. It was like, I don't want to be here forever. I want to like be a professor. I want to teach. That's kind of like my goal with theater, teaching and freelancing, kind of like how my old professors do, what they do right now. Something stable, but also you get to do fun stuff on the side, which I see what they do in their free time, and I'm like, dang, that's actually really cool that they have time to do that. And so that's kind of what I hope to do in the future. But I was watching Soul, and like I said on the show, like, man, that movie kind of put me in an existential crisis. Have you seen Soul?
I have not yet. I had a year of free Disney Plus and it expired, and I was like, I don't know if I want to pay for this.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I totally get that, but yeah, that movie just I hate being existential in a pandemic.
Yeah, it's kind of a locked room situation a little bit.
Exactly. For me, literally, because I can't really do anything. That's what this podcast was for, was just to kind of mend those theater wounds. But how has the pandemic like affected you guys? Like, probably not. I'm seeing all these like, Kind of Funny, I watch them specifically because that's all I really watch. Like, and I have been watching for the last 8 years of my life. And so like that they've always been like background noise. And I enjoy a lot of their stuff sometimes. But like, it seemed like on their end anyway, the stuff that they were doing, like it hasn't affected them too much, except that they can't go back to the studio that they had before. Being kind of like a smaller company, like how have you guys been able to, like how has the pandemic changed the way you guys work?
It really hasn't. I mean, because we're all in different states anyway. Like, we're the only people who are usually together are Andrew and Jessica because they're married. And so, like, we're used to recording mobily across multiple time zones. Like, that stuff didn't change. We were already remote. And then, like, I don't know. I'm kind of surprised that our Patreon did take some hits just because, you know, people needed to like refigure out their financial situations, but we didn't have too big of a fall off, which was kind of surprising. Mm-hmm. Just because we even told people like, hey, if you need to dip because of the pandemic, like please do that and don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. But we stayed fairly solid in that regard. I think it maybe helped contributed to a little bit of burnout in parts of the year, just because like Uppercut was kind of, you know, all we were doing aside from like our day jobs or whatever. Especially when it first started, you know, we were all streaming every single day of the week. Mm-hmm. And we did that for like a month and a half, 2 months.
Wow.
So, which was cool. Like it was good and fun. And I think our community needed it. Because I think people were kind of, we started doing it in like June, I think, which was, I think, when people were really starting to hit that first wave of like lockdown blues. So I think it was a good thing that we did it, but we were very tired mm-hmm. afterwards. And we definitely haven't streamed as much since, just because I think a lot of us got tired.
Yeah.
But things haven't been too different for us, honestly.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's at least good to hear that. Well, you guys are kind of used to like the whole FaceTime and all that, mm-hmm. all that good stuff. So it didn't really affect your workflow too much. I mean,
yeah, I mean, everything that we make is recorded mm-hmm. remotely anyway. Yeah. So.
And your website, it's a lot of like, it's like blogs and reviews. So that's kind of your bread and butter over there.
Yeah, it's just like critical like essays and stuff and reviews and occasionally like a silly listicle.
Okay. Well, that's dope. I mean, the burnout I get because I feel like the first month of the pandemic, it was really just like it's sheer like ignorance of being like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, this pandemic is going to end. Like it's going to end in like a month. Like
I don't know. What's happening?
Yeah, like we're all fine. Like we'll get back into it. Let's make some bread. You know, that's what I did. Like,
yeah, a lot of people made bread.
Yeah, it was fun. It was it's really like not that hard to make bread, but like once the reality of it all kind of sunk in, like I think it was in August, where it was yeah. it kind of sunk in. I was like, oh man, there's probably not going to be theater for another year. And now I'm looking at 2021 and I'm like, it's probably not going to be theater until 2022.
The earliest, yeah, probably.
At least for my theater troupe anyway. So it's like, yeah, I get the burnout thing because like, I think like maybe I was like burning myself out with theater at some point. Cause that's all I did, but I wasn't feeling it. I felt like I was in a really good spot. You know, I felt mm-hmm. like I was going to do really, really good stuff with like my playwright form and that being a way for young artists to find their artistic voices rather than them just writing like, oh yeah, just write like a silly fun play or whatever. I really wanted them to explore themselves and like things that matter to them in the community and things that matter to them that maybe they don't really have like the accessibility for. So I was like, when I told people like my idea, they were like, man, we've never had anything like this in the community. They're like, this is going to be really cool. And like that between getting the grant and a couple of other projects too, and possibly getting my master's, like it was just, we were on a good track and then not anymore. Now it's just like.
I mean, getting your master's seems like a whole thing in and of itself.
Yeah.
Like. Being perfectly honest, I don't know that I could ever go back to school.
Yeah, you would probably call me a liar, like if I said that I miss school, kind of, because I don't really have any structure besides going to work, and I miss that structure. And if you told 2019 Sid that, he'd be like, "Are you fucking stupid? Like this is awful. You're miserable right now."
Yeah, by the end of my undergrad, I was like, I'm done here and I do not wish to return.
I think like I really wanted to get my master's after I mentored some much younger kids in a production that I was doing. And that was really life changing. Like that really, it changed my perspective on like teaching and being a mentor. And I actually have an apprentice too that I teach, kind of like, yeah, my little tie, you know, an idea type of situation.
I actually just got assigned. I'm helping out with a gaming freelancer mentorship program.
Nice.
Yeah, so I guess I'm gonna get started with my little person. Well, they're not little. I don't even they're like an adult, I'm pretty sure. But we're gonna get going on Monday, I guess,
Well,
so.
fun times. Yeah, Monday, like this is February, almost, well, it's Monday, February 1st, right?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, dope, because this episode would probably come out a little late in in March or something. I don't know. I'll probably be totally wrong. I'll say something in the edit room when I edit this episode. Mine is little though, because she's 16. She was 15 when I met her, so we're
Oh, yeah, no, I'm pretty sure mine is an adult person.
going back to Dia. What is like one thing you th what is like the one of the biggest things that you think you learned from her, or that changed your perspective on things? Like, do you have something in specific that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I think just kind of the fact that the whole censoring yourself to get ahead thing doesn't necessarily have to be true. Because I feel like something that people have always said is she, is too loud or too aggressive or whatever, but she, has continued to get work since she started. And seeing that and seeing her at the places that I really wanted to be, like Waypoint and stuff, I was like, well, there's no reason that I have to censor myself or put up with bullshit to be able to do what I want to do. I just have to not to be bootstrapsy or whatever, because obviously there's a lot of other shit that goes into it, but I realized that if I could prove that I was good enough regardless, that it wouldn't matter. You know what I mean? Which on the one hand kind of sucks, because you shouldn't have to be head and shoulders better than your bootlicker colleagues to get ahead or to have a space. But it was something I realized was at least possible.
One thing I like to tell people is that, like, one thing I always encourage people to do is trying to figure out, like, why they love to do what they love to do. And not just because, like, oh, like for acting, for example, like, I always tell the story about this one friend of mine, and they're not getting any roles. And I was just like, so, like, why do you want to do this? Like, it's clear that you're upset. You haven't been getting any roles. And he's like, and when they answered me, and they were like, oh yeah, it's because of experience. I want something to put on my resume and stuff. And I was like, but that's not good enough. Like, that's like 100 million people trying to want to get on Broadway and like do the same kind of stuff. I feel like as long as you know what you want to do and you're passionate about that, like the rest of the stuff will kind of fall in place. And that's kind of like my philosophy on most things. Like, I know that, for example, this podcast has helped a lot of people, and they've told me that, and it's helped me personally to heal. And when I couldn't do what I was trained to do for the last 8 years of my life. It's so weird to like think about that, because like, yeah, it's theater, like online plays or whatever, like you can make, like, I'm not against them, but I don't think they're theater, because the theater needs to be live with other people in the room. And it's not the same vibe when you do it on Zoom. I mean, other people can probably find joy in it. I'm not trying to gatekeep in that way. But like, the thing that I was training myself to do and like bring myself up to do for the last 8 years doesn't exist anymore, like in 2020 and 2021. So it's like, this podcast has been a way for me to spread that message of connection and meeting other people who like the same stuff that I do. So like, as long as you have like a voice, and like as long as you know what that is, good stuff will come, I think.
Well, I always think about, 'cause sometimes, right, people lately, especially since I, went full time freelance, people have been like, "Oh, you're living your dream." And I'm like, that's such a weird thing, just because first of all, this only became my dream within the past couple of years, especially I used to before I, was on my antidepressants and stuff, I didn't think that I wanted to be a freelancer. I thought I wanted to have an office job. at like an outlet or something because I thought like I needed that structure. But now that I'm like taking better care of myself and stuff, I like doing things on my own, and I like having control of my content and stuff, and I do want to freelance full time. And like, but the industry is really bad a lot of the time. And sometimes I look at it and I'm like, why is this what you want to do? And it just comes down to like, I always think about whenever Austin Walker talks about like, you know, when people ask him like about entering the industry, he always says like, do it because you can't like not do it. Like do it because like you just have to do it, not because like of any other, you know, motive, because like it's not worth it if you're not here because like you just love it. And yeah, that's how it feels for me. Cause even when it's like, even when I'm pissed off, even when everything is just like infuriating and horrible shit is happening, like I don't want to go anywhere else.
Yeah, I feel that, you know, and for me, it, like my art, you know, my artistic side, my artistic statement is about connection. So wherever I can find that, and I realized this during the pandemic because theater was the way that I connect with like the community, with other people, with myself. And as long as I find ways to connect with other people, like I'm going to be fulfilled, you know? And right now, unfortunately, it can't be theater, you know, because other people will get hurt because of the virus, you know? And this podcast is a method or a vehicle for me to fulfill that, you know? So I what I'm saying is I agree.
Yeah. I think, you just got to find that like thing that makes brain go burr.
Yeah, exactly. let's see. Tell me more about Dia. Like, why'd you want to talk about her today of all days?
I guess just because, I don't know. I'm not very good with like feelings and stuff, but I do feel as though when you appreciate people and they're like, you know, in your actual circle, it's important that they like know. And so like, and it's just true. Like when I think of the, like the reasons that I got here and all of that, it was because I was chasing her, you know, like I wanted to be like her, and I'm not, I'm me. Which, you know, I had to have my whole own, you know, coming to terms with what that means and stuff. But like, I like the me that I am, that I became while I was trying to be her, you know what, like, I feel like that's still like a weird way of saying it, but like, I think in the process of like trying to be like her, I ended up becoming someone that I like. So
yeah, there's energy there, you know, like, just like how when you hate something really bad, this is what my teacher, my professor was telling me before when I was, I took my apprentice to meet her so she can talk about getting a theater degree, which afterwards I, like, this is a, an aside thing, but I told her like, don't get a theater degree in the pandemic, please. Like, don't do that. Please don't do that. It's not worth it to do online stuff. But anyway, my professor later, like, because she disconnected, she asked me like, hey Sid, do you know why I asked your like apprentice why what lessons that or what subjects she hated? And I was like, no, like tell me why. And she was like, it's because there's energy there. It's something that when you hate something, it can help you realize your own taste or what you actually like out there. And you know, I kind of lost my train of thought there because I was gonna say like, you know, oh, there we go. I'm back. When you were chasing her, you were trying to figure out who you were, and you were kind of like in your early 20s, you know, like most early people in their early 20s, they don't really know what's going on. Like I didn't know. And so it takes a long time, but like it takes people like, you know, the people that we mentor or the people that we like take under our wings or even our friends too, to be like, and they all kind of like help us mold into like the people that we eventually be. Wow, I'm not saying words right. It all says
it's Saturday.
Yeah, brain going burr right now, but like in a different way. You know what I mean?
In a less good way.
Yeah, it's like a dead engine. Like, but I think what I'm trying to say is like, People can influence you, but also like you're not that person. Like you have to be yourself in all things. Like the people can influence you in a lot of different ways, but you always have to remember that you are your own person. You're your own experience. You know, I'm Sid. I'm queer mostly. I say I'm gay, but like I'm very open to like meeting women in the future, because I just go with the vibes pretty much. And I'm, you know, I like connecting with people. Like I would like to pretend like I'm introverted and like all I want to do is be at home and stuff. But like when I talk to people, I love talking to them. I love hearing their stories. And I have this weird effect on people where like strangers will tell me like weird, like some of their most darkest stuff. Like I was on the bus one day and this lady told me about her son who died just out of the blue. And I was like, wow, you laid that on me. Like, are you feeling okay? Like, I kind of want to know more. I'm very interested. And
Oh,
so,
I would not be able to handle that situation.
oh, I've been in a much worse situation than that. And I totally know how you feel. Like,
I don't like feelings.
I love like just interacting with people sometimes, 'cause like you get cool stories. And that's how actually I met, if you listen to her episode, Keely Anderson, that's how I met her. Like we were both at a theater festival and she, we kind of stumbled into each other, and she was going through one of the hardest moments, one of the most darkest moments in her life. And she didn't even know who I was. And I just let her talk. And it was so cool. We're best friends now.
I talk to people a lot about feelings, but I always feel like those are always the moments where I'm like, am I a serial killer? Because like, am I going to end up murdering people? Because I just don't like emotional vulnerability. And so when other people are vulnerable with me, I'm like, no, it's okay, but I don't really know what to do. Like, I'm not mad at you, but I'm just gonna do my best and hope I don't fuck this up.
Yeah, you're doing a good job so far. You're kind of letting your guard down.
I don't. I mean, I've had a lot of practice, but it's not being expressive feelings wise is not a strength of mine. That's why
Yeah, you would hate being in a theater.
never did it. I had a friend who was a theater kid in high school who always wanted me to try, and I was just like, this is not my scene.
No, you would absolutely like, if you think all those stereotypical, like those TikToks of like, oh, this is what theater kids do, blah, blah, blah. To an extent, they're right.
We just had the same thing as like band kids too, but I liked being around band kids more because they were far more socially inept.
Yeah, there we go. We're kind of coming to the end of this here. Tell me, I'm going to ask a question that I always ask people on the show. Pretend Dia's here right now. She's with us. She's hearing this cool conversations that we're having. What is one thing you like to tell her right now? And this is emotion feeling stuff right now.
I know. How dare you? I think I was just like, it's just infuriating that she continues to be the fucking coolest, like, all the time. And I probably will be mad at her forever about it, but like in a good way.
You're just super pissed off about how amazing she is. How dare her?
That's kind of been the feeling I've had towards her for a long time. Like, we are genuinely friends, but also I'm like, fuck you.
I feel that too. I have a lot of cool friends where I'm just like, man, you got it all. It feels like, even though.
Yeah, no. I think I've tried to, in the past, like, year and a half-ish, I've really tried to embrace the idea of, like, anime rivals, but, like the positive ones. Like, not Naruto Sasuke shit, because that's like some shit. But like, just the idea of like seeing other, it kind of ties into that whole like, oh, tough writing advice, but other writers are your competition. And it's like, on the one hand, like, obviously that's a head ass take. But on the other, like, I like to compete with people. I'm very competitive, but only in like certain aspects. And so, like, it kind of goes back to the whole like chasing after Dia thing. Like, I like having someone to measure myself against, which is like, I don't know, that's probably not like super psychologically healthy, but like, I like getting to see the people who are above me and be like, I want to be like that, and like going after it, you know? And I like having friends around me who are either good at things that I'm not good at or who are just like better than me in general, because I feel like then I want to work harder to be like that. Like even with Jess, right? Like she and I are such weird friends and like partners because like we're really, really different people. Like Jess is super, super emotional, like very in touch with all that kind of shit. But like we're really like very inverse of each other, but like we work really well together because of that. And I like being around her because she challenges me to be different than I am in a lot of ways.
Yeah. No, I feel that. Yeah, all of that, honestly. Like it's hard to be vulnerable. And like I feel like personally I've tried to, like I wasn't really good at it because living in the Middle East most of my life, like it wasn't really allowed, you know? Like a lot of the trauma that I faced like during my parents' divorce and stuff, like I wasn't really allowed to talk about it with anyone. And there was just like this period of time, like what, 5, 6, 7 years, where I just did not talk about what had happened when I was like 13. You know, I'm 28 now. I'm probably not getting into it today, but like, you know, I'm more comfortable now talking about the experiences that I had. And when Fatima, like good friend of mine, artist, she was on the show, we talked about, she's from Iran and her family left a lot of political stuff, you know, like there was a lot of political war going on in Iran and a lot of people from Iran migrated to the United States. And so that was kind of like the first time I actually got to talk about like a lot of like the political abuse, you know, between you know, the monarchy and Iran with an actual Middle Eastern, you know, it's very interesting. But feelings are hard, and it took me so long to be the person I am today. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, theater helped in some ways. You know, I'm pretty sure I would have figured it out later on in life, but, you know, theater was really doesn't give you an avenue to like hide, you know?
Yeah.
It's actually, I have the quote on my little journal here is from Anne Bogart, the theater artist that I was telling about earlier in the show. She says, you can't hide. Your growth is, your growth as an artist is not separate from your growth as a human being. It's all visible, you know? And then when she says shit like that, it's like, man, you're right. You can't like really hide from your emotions, no matter how hard you try. And so it's hard shit to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's more, we don't have to get into the whole thing, but it's like, I'm a very self-aware person most of the time. I just like, I'm like, okay, that's what this is. It's going to stay right here with me.
No, I feel that. I feel that 100%. And, you know, like, that's totally valid. You don't have to tell anybody your shit.
Yeah. We're working on it. It's a process. This is why people go to therapy.
right, you are. Guys, gals, and non-binary pals, this has been Wayward Artists in a Wayward World. Ty, where can people find you? And any last words?
You can find me on Twitter at @ty_GNARs and over on Uppercut, which is at uppercutcrit.com.
Nice. And any final words?
I think I'm good.
There we go. We're good. And guys, gals, and non-binary pals, without further ado, it's been real. Yeah.